Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio. I'm Jim Grady, and I'm here with host Lou Wise, who is the founder of Manufacturing Talk Radio. He's also the president of All Metals and Forge Group. If you're looking for some industrial forgings, seamless rolled rings, or custom forged shapes, you can check them out at steelforge.com and submit an RFQ while you're there. We're excited today to have Chris Keel back with us. We're going to be doing some interesting things with Chris probably next month in the very near future to expand what he shared in the past, which was typically the Credit Manager's Index Report. We're now going in a new direction with Chris on a report we call ASIS, A-S-I-S, and I'm going to have Chris explain what that animal is, and when you get a subscription to it, you're going to find a wealth of information. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're so welcome. So you want
ASIS,
me to describe?
Explain ASIS.
I will do that. About 2 years ago, Armada began developing a tool that we were going to use to monitor and study the industrial economy. So we took the industrial numbers that the Fed puts together every month and broke that down with a number of variables to try to be predictive. So the data that comes from the Fed includes information on aerospace, automotive, primary metals, fab metals, electronics, you name it. And then we break down each of those sectors and look at some of the inputs that affect that sector. And we look at some of the customer activity on the other end. And the guy that helped us develop all this and is sort of our statistical guru is a retired lieutenant colonel who used to be in the artillery. And he pointed out that accuracy was very important in that career. And it was one of those things where if you don't get it absolutely right, you blow up the wrong people. So he has applied that same kind of rigor to our system. And we have been getting about 96 to 97% accuracy month to month in terms of how we are tracking the overall industrial economy and those individual subsectors. So they often twin up with the overall, but often they don't. You'll start to see sectors that are doing better than others. We have sectors that often do less well than others, but it ends up being a pretty remarkable tool. And we've been testing it, basically distributing it for almost 2 years now. So as you pointed out, we're going to be doing more of this with you guys. People who are listening to the show are welcome to sign up for a free trial, and they too can get 36 pages worth of graphs and charts, because not only is it good information, but if you're an insomniac, by God, this will help. So
let's give our listeners and viewers the email address to get there.
Indeed. The best way to get it would be to go straight to the website, because then you can also take a look at the thing itself. And that is www.asisintelligence.com. So asisintelligence, all one word, .com. If you want to see everything that Armada does, we have a second website, which is www.armada-intel.com. So it's armada-intel.com. And either way, we'll get you into the lair, and you can see not only the ASIS, but the flagship, which is something we write three times a week. We are nothing if not prolific and verbose. So for people who have just an insane desire to read and consume, we're the outlet for you.
I've already become addicted.
Very good. This is good news indeed.
Yeah, it's very important for those who are in the marketplace, the industrial marketplace, manufacturing marketplace, to be able to understand what's going on. And
right.
Frankly, I've been in business 60 years, but that doesn't mean I understand the numbers. I know what the numbers are, absorb the numbers, but you know, getting it from a good source, an analytic forecasted ideology, if you will, saves me a lot of time.
Yeah, and one of the things that we've noted over the years, and I make this point when I do my presentations, we have gotten this attitude from the media that we're no longer a manufacturing or an industrial country. And that is so wrong. A lot of the problem is that we don't measure manufacturing very well. We are constantly being told that only 6 or 7% of the population works in manufacturing. And that's only because we categorize people by what they actually do. 92% of the people who work for Ford Motor Company are not in manufacturing, according to this statistical designation, because they're in HR, they're in design, they're in accounts receivable. But if you were to tell one of those people, hi, you're not in manufacturing, they say, excuse me, I work for Ford. You know, we make cars. How am I not in manufacturing? It's like, well, you're not on the line. Well, nobody's on the line. Robots do that now. You know, so how can you tell me I'm not in manufacturing? So if you look at people according to where they actually work, 30% of the population works for a manufacturer. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, 1/3 of the workforce is in manufacturing. Yeah, so I think it's fairly important. The U.S. accounts for 40% of the value of global manufacturing. China accounts for 10. China makes the junk we put in Walmart. We make the machines the Chinese use to make the junk that goes in Walmart. We make road building equipment. We make airplanes. We make, you know, 92% of all the railroad engines in the world are made in the United States. So the only country that rivals us in terms of value is Germany, not China. And so you have to kind of break past this notion that we aren't a manufacturing country. We are. We're one of the largest, most important manufacturing countries in the world and have been for, 150 years. So when you track the industrial sector, you're really tracking the whole country.
You know, I feel like I should be waving the flag right now.
As well you should.
Right. That being said, China has a pretty good train manufacturing system as well. Mm-hmm. At least it goes 100 miles an hour faster.
Right, exactly. And, big difference. You know, but there's a big difference, and even when you start looking at the production that's going on in other countries, the number of U.S. parts that end up in these products is astonishing. You know, I mean, we get this notion that everything we get from China is put in. Well, we also sell them things, you know, other than soybeans. So, you know, it's truly a global economy, and it's impossible to separate countries out in convenient political designations. But I get very tired of this constant drumbeat that, you know, we don't make anything anymore, that we're nothing but consumers. And I mean, that's just not true. And it skews the way people respond to data. You know, like, why are you talking about manufacturing? It's not important here anymore. Yes, it is. And it drives the economy.
So, okay, we hashed out and solved all the problems of the world.
Yes, we have.
So I want to talk about gas.
Yes.
Let's talk about gas.
Why not?
Every now and again, I get a little gas. I take a little shot.
Exactly. This is why my Lanta stock is going up. Yeah.
That's
so
true.
We're and it's intriguing too, because we always knew that the energy sector drives everything in the world, and it always has, it always will. What we're dealing with now is yet another black swan event. We had the first black swan in 2020 with the COVID virus. We didn't know what we were dealing with. We knew we were going to get hit with a virus. We always do every year. But we didn't know exactly what it would look like. So we ended up having a very bad 2020. The black swan we're dealing with now, of course, is the Ukraine war. And so how does the world economy cope with losing the third largest oil producer in the world? And that's essentially the role that Russia played. Russia does not really do anything but commodities. It is not a country that has a manufacturing sector that's global. It has no service sector. It has no consumer sector. It's a commodities. It used to be described as a third world country with a first world military, and now we're not so sure about the military. So it's oil and gas and food. the reason that the oil prices have gone up is fairly obvious. We've lost that producer. But then there's the question of why the oil producers have not tried more aggressively to compensate for that loss. And the oil sector pushes back and says, we understand current demand, we see that, but we also know that it could be very temporary. This is an artificial shortage. There's plenty of oil. The Russians are storing it in every place they can think of. If that oil comes back on the market, we go from shortage to glut literally overnight. How likely is that? At the moment, not very likely. But if you start to look at what Russia is doing right now, they've moved to Plan B. They no longer really seem like they're going to try to take over the entire country. They're going to try to break it in half and blah, blah, blah. So the oil companies are saying it's not imminent, but it could happen in a month. It could happen in 2 months. It could happen in 6 months. They're looking at underlying demand, and they're not seeing a return to what we normally do when it comes to consumption. Our consumption is based on commuting back and forth to work. That's about 90% of how we consume fuel. And as long as 60% of us are still working remotely, which is the current number, they don't see consumption coming back to normal levels. And so they're reluctant. It's the US is back to full production. Canada is back to full production. The hesitance is coming from OPEC, and it's coming from some of the African producers, and they're waiting. They want to see what real demand looks like. When it comes to the US sector, you know, North Dakota is booming again. I used to call the Motel 6 in Williston to get a sense of what's going on with that sector. During the last oil boom, you couldn't get a Motel 6 for less than $495 a night. It is now back up to $350. So it is becoming a live market again. They even had to pass a law in North Dakota that allowed you to put more than 10 people in a hotel room. So we're seeing our own recovery when it comes to production. But in the meantime, prices are escalating, and frankly, the biggest problem in the U.S. now is not crude, it's refineries. The refineries are overwhelmed, and we really haven't built a new one since the 1980s. So we're now suffering from the fact that, you know, we saw this coming, but we didn't do anything about it. So,
I'm looking at shortages on grocery store shelves, mm-hmm. and I ask myself, did all the red dye number 5 disappear and I can't get Fruit Loops anymore? Did Clausen only decide to grow big pickles and no more mini dill pickles? Some of the things that aren't there, I scratch my head and go, come on, that all didn't come from China. What's the deal?
Yeah, it's basically transportation bottlenecks. I mean, when you look at the entire grocery chain, the food chain, there's an awful lot of players involved. So if you are seeing inhibitions like in the trucking sector, there was until quite recently 14 loads for every truck on the road. It has now come down to 4. So you've seen some progress, but you still have more loads than there are trucks, despite the fact that we have seen 68,000 new trucking companies in the last 2 years, because it's a very, very easy sector to get into. You know, someone says, hey, I want to be in trucking. What do I need? A truck and someone to drive it. So it's like, well, I got a truck and I'm going to drive it. Well, you're in trucking. So good luck to you. And when there's this kind of capacity issue, you go into business immediately. What you're running into is things like, well, there may be no shortage of that size pickle, but there's a shortage of the lid that goes on the pickle jar. There's a shortage of glass to put the pickles in. There's a shortage of labels. There's a shortage of ink to print the labels. And so all of this, you suddenly run into, like I was talking to a faucet manufacturer, everything is ready, faucets are ready. What they didn't have was the little button that said H or C. And you would think by now, people would know cold on the right, hot on the left. but if they didn't have the little button that said H or C, they wouldn't buy the faucet. So they're sitting there on hundreds of thousands of faucets they can't sell because the little button is on a ship somewhere coming in from China.
Dr. Chris, I understand everything that you're saying, but I got to also point out from the cynical side that I do believe that certain manufacturers are taking advantage of the situation and gouging prices for themselves. And I'll give you an example. And I do not know this to be true, but I know that it's true. And that is, and I'm not using names of companies or what have you, but every morning I have my creamed herring and onions, 2 or 3 forkfuls, and I'm off for the day. Well, I do that every day. And my wife used to buy the jars that were this big. Mm-hmm. 2 or 3 jars, and you know, it would take me a long time to go through that. And the price was X. Well, since COVID, you can't get the big jars. So now you've got the little jar. So here's a little jar, and here's the big jar. And the little jar is almost the same price as the big jar.
Right. Well, and see what you're dealing with. No, it doesn't say anything about gouging. It is simply when there's a shortage, there's two ways to respond. You can either say, all right, we're going to keep prices where they are, and there's a shortage. And about midway through the month, we're going to have an incredible number of really pissed off consumers who are saying, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? I want it. Where is it? We're out. We don't have it. We're out. We don't have it. It's gone. There's no more. And the consumer is mad. Or you raise the price and you control demand that way and say, okay, we don't have enough. We're going to raise the price because that will start to eliminate a certain number of consumers who are saying, yeah, I don't really want it that bad. So I'm not going to buy it. And the person who really does want it is going to say, yeah, well, at least it's available. It's more expensive, but it's what the auto sector is doing right now. The auto sector has basically said, if you want to buy one of the popular basic models, we're producing those because we have enough parts to be able to do that. If you want something a little exotic, good luck, because there isn't enough demand and we're not going to produce it. And even if we do, it's going to be outrageously expensive because we're in triage mode. We're going to do what we can. Like right now, if you want an F-150 truck, you can get one of those. You want a dually? Good luck, because there isn't the demand for that larger truck to justify. So price has always been used as a mechanism to separate out. And back in the day, I used to be a Soviet specialist. The Soviets did it the other way. They use flat storage. And they just basically said, look, if there's a shortage, there's a shortage. And what you got in the old Soviet Union were 700 people standing in line, hopefully, because there'll be a product at the other end. And when they would get to the end of the line, we are out. No, it is not here. Go away. But I haven't been able to buy bread for like 6 weeks. Too bad. We are out of bread. Go away. No bread for you. And it's like, but I'm starving. Too bad. You know, and it's, you either control it by not having anything at all, or you control it with higher prices. Once the supply chain begins to right itself, who knows when that's going to happen? Prices will drop rather dramatically because the supply will start to appear. And now you'll have the opposite problem of companies saying, okay, we finally got the little buttons for the faucet. We have 30 million of them. So we really need to get rid of these faucets. And so how about a sale on faucets? Because we now have little buttons on them, you know, so We go through this boom and bust all the time, and it drives businesses nuts because, you know, they wish that demand was consistent and they wish that supply was consistent, and neither one ever is. So,
who writes your material, Chris?
I do. My God, can't you tell, as bad as it is? So
no, you always tickle my funny bone. Deb?
Well, Chris, part of this, I'm sure, has got to be the labor issue. I mean, I can only make so many jars per shift. and I don't have the labor to run the machines to make the jars or put on the labels. Are we still seeing that ripple effect from COVID?
Oh, very definitely. And it's even beyond COVID, because we've seen everything from predictable demographics to just the fact that there are different ways to make a living now. I mean, again, the media tends to grab onto things that are not quite accurate. There's this whole notion of people just don't want to work. Come on, nobody wants to work. We work because we have to. We have bills to pay. We have things we want. When I used to teach economics, I pointed out to my students, there are only two motivations, fear and greed. You're either afraid that you're going to lose what you have, so you go to work, or you're greedy for more, so you go to work. You know, there's the only two things that really motivate. The trouble now is that people can make money in lots of unique ways. There are, the gig economy is alive and well. We know it through Uber and Lyft, but it's everything else. I mean, I think I've pointed out once before, the dry cleaners are worried about internet laundry. Women who ended up going home because they had to take care of their kids started doing laundry for other people out of their homes. The average take home was $350 a day. Or you could work a minimum wage job for $15 an hour and make $120 a day. Which would you rather do? Let's do laundry at home. You know, you can do it because you've got the local internet, and you just go out on the whatever the local internet is and say, hey, you know, I'll do your laundry. And there are people that like, sold, I don't want to do this stuff, and off you go. People are also noticing that when you do a job like that, you're not telling anybody that you're doing a job like that, so the IRS doesn't take a piece of it, unless you're being really, really honest, which very few of us are.
To manufacturing talk radio.
Exactly, and then they're going to have to go find all those secret launderers, so good luck with that. But we are also just simply dealing with the fact that the world's, our largest age cohort, the boomers, retiring and then being replaced by the smallest cohort, Gen Xers. So as we've lost 26 million boomers, Gen Xers are trying to fill that gap, but there aren't enough of them. And that's forcing companies to move further down to millennials. And they're beginning to sit there and say, yeah, I used to have a 63-year-old CFO. Now I have a 27-year-old CFO because I had to hire a millennial. Wait a minute. I'm not ready for that. So,
yeah, that's a clearly another conundrum. So how is manufacturing doing? I mean, they're just, it looks like they're running to catch up and only shuffling forward.
Well, it's depends a little bit on the sector, and just to be fun, I'm going to share a screen because economists can't talk without a graph. So, you know, we know we have to have all kinds of exciting things to show people. So if you look at one of the things that we developed, and this is probably a lot more noise than you really need, this is how we've been tracking industrial production in the United States over the last several months. And we've experienced a fairly dramatic decline after sort of mid-2022. But it leveled off and is beginning to show some signs of recovery coming into 2023. The important thing is recognizing that even with that decline, it is about where it was in, say, 2019. You know, it's higher than it was before we hit the COVID year. So it feels awful because 2021 was such a robust year. I mean, it's hard to kind of put this in construct, but we grew at almost 6% in 2021, and the U.S. never grows that fast. You know, we are consistently around 2.5% growth. Everything since 2021 has slowed down as we knew it would, but it feels awful because we're like, wow, we were doing so well in 2021. What's happened? And it's like, well, you know, we blew through all the extra money that was being funneled into the economy. If you look at historically, you know, the historic numbers were not all that far off from where we were for the most of the last decade. So we haven't plunged into complete distress. And then if you look at particular sectors, you get all kinds of different performances. I mean, look what happened just with aerospace. Aerospace is recovering, and there's a demand for airplanes, which there wasn't even as recently as a year or so ago. So it's a real mixed bag as far as manufacturing is concerned, and much of it has been hinging on the supply chain breakdown. We're seeing a reaction to that now. Reshoring is a much bigger deal than it was even a year or two ago. There's been almost $1 trillion of reshoring already, and by the end of the year, it'll be closer to $2 trillion. So that's very good news for U.S. manufacturers who had been losing business to China and elsewhere. Their customers are saying, yeah, it's still cheaper to do business in China. However, I don't really like the fact that all that cheap labor has produced a product that's sitting in a port for 8 months. And it's like, it doesn't really do me any good if it's sitting on a ship. It's like, wow, that was really cheap and I can't get it. Yay. So I think I'd rather pay a little bit more and actually get it. And that's one of the things that's beginning to play a much major role. I mean, M&A activity is showing it. It's not instantaneous. We're not going to get all of that business back, but we're going to get a lot of it.
Yeah, and then all we got to do is find enough employees.
Absolutely.
For
so the next thing we have to do is, you know, like arrange a trade and bring some of the Chinese workers with the with the companies. It's like, we're moving the company back and we want your people too. But
they did that in Panama when they built the first canal.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like, so, and you're absolutely right. It's going to be a matter of integrating robotics and automation. But, you know, it's, we've talked about this for years. You see these problems developing, and there's just not the political will to say, you know, we really ought to focus on training. That would be nice. You know, a couple of years ago, we graduated 10,000 students with advanced degrees in film criticism.
Yeah, that's a value.
Yeah, you know, and most of those people are working at Starbucks now. And, you know, would it kill you to support the trade schools? Would it kill you to support the community colleges? Would it kill you to reintroduce shop into high schools? Only about 5% of high schools still have shop. And yet here we sit with a population, 25% of which is a kinetic learner. They learn with their hands. And the worst conceivable way to educate a kinetic learner is this. It's like, you know, all of my kinetic learners by this time have left the room, have either that or they're diligently dismantling the computer just for something to do. It's kind of like, I'm so bored. Will he please shut up? So,
well, a conversation, Chris, I had with some business associates a while back was when states were pushing the $15 minimum wage. Mm-hmm. And I said, the net result of this, particularly if you look at the fast food industry, is that they're going to eliminate workers. They're going to automate jobs.
Yeah.
And on the average, they'll probably end up paying $8 an hour because they eliminated jobs with machines.
Yeah, exactly. And I was talking to some McDonald's franchise owners, and many of them have gone 100% automated. You know, they have gotten their restaurants down to maybe two people, one guy to clean the tables and one guy to run the machines. And because you can automate the entire process, and consumers may have resisted that a few years ago, but we don't now. I mean, the consumer has gotten used to, we pump our own gas, we self-serve in grocery stores. You know, I go to airports now where there's nobody in that shop at all. You just walk in, scan your credit card, walk out with whatever you want. There's no human being there at all. And that used to be an expensive option. But when you figure how much you're going to have to pay, minimum wage and the like, well, it's cheaper to, like the guy that was doing the fully automated McDonald's, he said, hey, bonus, I don't have theft to deal with anymore. And I'm open 24/7. Robots don't care. It's the middle of the night, you know. So it's one of those things where we either have to come to grips with a more automated society. We have to do a better job of training. We need to look more closely at immigration. It's not easy anymore. The people that we need have to have skills. You know, we're not the way we were even 50 years ago, where we could take unskilled people, find something for them to do, and wait for the second generation to be ready. Now we're hoping that there are people on the border of Texas who are screaming across the border, I can run a CNC machine. I know how to do laser cutting, you know, and it's like, well, we don't have those kind of people.
We do in Ukraine.
We do. We do. And the Europeans are paying close attention to this. I mean, the Germans, the Germans are eminently practical, and they're basically saying, oh, we are very anxious to bring in the refugees, particularly if you work in a factory. Raise your hands.
It doesn't have to be a standing factory.
Yeah, exactly. And so honestly, some of the European analysts are saying, yeah, we don't want to make a big deal out of this, but this crisis could really benefit some of the countries, Germany, Italy, that have older populations with lots of retirement. People have sort of not noticed that a lot of the industrial societies have gotten very old. Ukraine is a very young population. It's one of the youngest in Eastern Europe. And so people are like, well, we don't really want to talk about the advantages of a war, but, you know, there are some. Industries basically have to, I gave a talk 2 weeks ago to the Casket and Funeral Supply Association, and they wanted me to downplay that 2020 was a good year for them. It's like, you just have to be in the right industry.
Very true. Well, Chris, so we appreciate
having you. You've reached a new low, Chris.
Well, you know, when you're talking about caskets and funerals, that's kind of inevitable. There is a new low. You know, it's going to be 6 feet below where you used to be.
Well, Chris, we appreciate having the opportunity to chat with you again, to have you back on the show. We look forward to what we're about to put together with you going forward, because Armada produces, in addition to the ACES documentation, a report called the Flagship Report, which I find particularly fascinating. I became a subscriber shortly after reading the first copy. I didn't even go for the trial. I just went straight for the subscription.
Very good. Very good.
Great information, and we appreciate you being back with us. Thanks again.
Yeah, and I encourage listeners and participants to, you know, get in touch with me through the website or whatever. I'm just as long-winded in print as I am in public. And it's my pleasure to talk with the people. The Flagship is a whopping $7 a month, so it's the cost of a Starbucks caramel macchiato, so it's not prohibitive. And anyone who has comments, questions, observations, I love observations. I love people to say, this is what's happening in my business. The most valuable thing that I get out of this interaction is you and Lou talking about what you're actually seeing, so that I can see if my graphs and charts match up with reality.
Excellent.
Well, we encourage everyone to check out armada-intel.com. Also acesintelligence.com. And while you're surfing the web, stop by jacketmediaco.com, where you can find this show and all of the other podcasts we produce. And watch out for a new show coming with Dr. Chris Keel in the very near future. Thanks for being with us on this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.